Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham on AM 770 KTTH. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital Management, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often treacherous financial markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
Welcome to the show. Great to be back. And I say it every week, but we do have a great show planned for you today, so do not turn off the dial. And I feel your pain. I get it. When I get into the car on the weekend, turn on KTTH, hoping to catch a rerun of MedVed or Rush. Or maybe you actually turned it on, trying to listen to our show. Anyway, I'll try to convince myself of that. But we do actually have a great show. We're going to be joined today by Mark Yusko. He's been with us before. Mark runs a multi-billion dollar hedge fund called Morgan Creek Capital. He founded it. He ran the Notre Dame Endowment Fund, the Chapel Hill Endowment Fund. He was a protege of Julian Robertson, one of the greatest investors that most of you have probably never heard of, but had returns similar or better than Buffett over a 30-year career. Mark is one of the top financial brains in the country, period. And for whatever reason, he's been kind enough to mentor or speak with your humble host. So it's invaluable. I always try to talk to him a little bit off the air as well when we're doing these things. But we're going to talk about everything from valuations to current markets to market forecasts to Bitcoin and all this kind of stuff. And we don't endorse anything or disagree or back up anything what Mark says. I just think that he brings a incredible insight and want to be able to bring that to you guys as part of the value that hopefully we're passing on. Now, before we do that, I'm going to do an abbreviated market update here. A strange action. I don't really know what else to say other than strange action. We continue to see strong action in oil. Inflation signs are picking up everywhere. And one of the things we've been talking about, maybe the economy is getting stronger. Maybe it's picking up steam. Maybe things are looking better. And it looks better. There's no question about it. But we just saw first quarter GDP get revised downward. So even those of us that are cheering things on, look, better is better. You're not going to hear me gripe about it. But at the same time, when we use that in conjunction with the current valuations, they just don't make sense. Okay, they don't. And does that mean we try to time markets? You guys have heard me say it a million times. No. Okay. But I continue to sound the alarm about tech. And I fully understand the fact that I'm going to be a pariah, or there's probably people in here listening that have tons of tech in their portfolio that are laughing at me and that have laughed at me for some time. That's fine. Okay. Because at the end of the day, like Warren Buffett says, the market is in the short term a voting machine and the long term a weighing machine. When you got companies like Salesforce.com, I could do a whole episode on that one alone. But Netflix, it isn't about whether I think the stock's going to go higher or not. If you put a gun to my head, I'd say it's probably going to go higher. But it's that there is no attachment to reality. Okay. And that's not me having an opinion about it. We could sit down, and if you want to do that, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. I'll have a conversation with you about it on the phone. A, just because I love talking about it, but B, also trying to educate people. There is no attachment to actual value. Okay. And at the end of the day, we can give ourselves all the excuses to buy stocks. But regardless of what any reasons, when people are telling you that you can't value something on a traditional metric, you should run the other way. And why is that? Because investing is all about cash flow, right? That's the whole point. There isn't anything magic about stocks, right? Everybody goes, points to Amazon. Incredible success story. Don't get me wrong. I've got all the respect for them in the world. But on a cash flow basis, listen, there's going to be a day where we wake up and Amazon won't go away. Like I said, it's a phenomenal company. But there's going to be a day where it's worth substantially less than it currently is. And we are approaching the longest and biggest bull market in history from top to bottom. And you need to make sure you know what you own, and you need to make sure that you're not exposed to too much risk. And if you have questions about that, if you want to know about our products that rise with the stock market but don't fall when the market goes down and have zero management fees, if you want to know about our ETF portfolios, the guide against, that protect against the downside, give us a call, guys. We're getting close. 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. We got to make this short because I want to leave plenty of room for the Mark Yusko interview. But give us a call. You can also go to the radio show website at knowyourriskradio.com. Listen to our podcasts on our iTunes page. Or even just shoot us an email and we can do a little correspondence over email. Give you a comparison of what we're doing compared to what you're doing, complete with costs and performance. Anyway, got to run. Stick with us. Got a great show and a great interview coming up. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach uncover the truth about the financial markets with simple and honest advice to help you plan for retirement. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Dory Monson. I'm here with Brian Ott, host of Long Term Care Radio right here on Cairo every Saturday at 7. And Brian, before signing up for a plan, I attended one of your classes with my wife, learned how passionate you are about what you do and how you love to teach people about the importance of long term care planning.
You know, I really do love educating people, Dory.
Yeah, why is that?
Well, someone took the time to educate my grandmother about long term care, which meant she got the level of care she deserved, but it also meant my mom didn't have to give up her life to be a caregiver. You know, Dory, it taught me firsthand that long-term care planning protects you and the people you care about most.
Yeah, that's exactly why my wife and I put a plan in place with Brian and why I recommend you do the same. Start by joining Brian at his next long-term care planning class and learn about the most innovative plans available, like the one I got. It's going to pay me back whether I use it or not. Don't miss Brian's next class. It's Thursday, July 19th at 7 p.m. in Bellevue. There are only a few seats left, so sign up today at 525longtermcare.com. That's 525longtermcare.com.
Stocks, bonds, and real estate are all at record highs. So why risk it? Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer of Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Call now and get our brand new version of Common Sense Investing. It's our complimentary booklet that shows you how you can protect your retirement portfolio against loss, but still participate in market gains. Safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. Our clients have increased their returns while being insured against loss. And like our client Dory Monson says, go from retirement hoping to retirement planning.
I am indeed a client, Zach, and I got to tell you, you have to read Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, thank you for joining us and want to get right into this. We have a special guest. I think this is this the third time you've been on with us, Mark?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and he's a Seattle Sun. You weren't born here, though, were you?
No, I lived there from 4 until 16, so all of my formative years. So I still call Seattle home.
Gotcha. So you got out of here before things got kind of wacky. You probably don't keep up on Seattle city politics, but we got some real colorful characters running things here, so it's been a wild ride recently. We're actually thinking about doing government sponsored heroin to our homeless population, and I don't know if it's serious, but this was floated recently because we could ensure the quality of the smack that way, you know. So
right, and you know there is a twisted logic in that. If you have fewer people getting really sick with chronic diseases like HEP, then it costs the system less. But you can do that probably with needle exchanges as opposed to actually providing the drugs. And I would actually rather see them put them in, you know, rehab education. But, you know, longer conversation. We don't really want to talk about that today,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no. Anyway, well... I'm sure you're pretty good at pop culture. I'm sure you've seen the movie The Big Lebowski, right?
Which one?
The Big Lebowski.
Yeah, you know, I have to admit, as even though I quote many lines from the movie, I have not ever sat down and watched the whole thing, and I know it's a cult classic. My daughter's seen it like 10 times. Yeah. So
okay, so
I should sit down this weekend and watch it over the long weekend.
Yeah, it's worth it. It's hilarious. Anyway, there's a scene in there. John Goodman plays this guy, and yep. He's got a real rage problem, and he freaks out on the bowling lanes, and he sits there and goes, you know, this isn't NOM. There are rules here, right?
Exactly.
I found myself, and this happens periodically, but I found myself doing that the other day while doing some research with a couple of our guys and looking at these markets. And I know we've talked about this before when you're on the show, but I continue to be staggered by how long this incredible valuation goes on. When we started doing the show a little over 2 years ago, I was sounding the alarm bell because I think total market cap to GDP was at like 128. Today we're at 150.
Yep.
You've been at this a lot longer than I have, and you've got a pedigree that, you know, makes mine look very meager in comparison. What do you make of all this? How much longer can this go on?
Look, their famous line, you know, from years and years ago, right after the great crash, was, you know, the markets can behave irrationally longer than the rational investor can remain solvent. And I think that's being, you know, shown to us in spades here. Look, I just did a big webinar yesterday on this, as to we call it the great separation, and why now is finally the time to get hedged. And, you know, people are interested, they can go to our YouTube channel Around the World with USCO and see that. But the key is that I, like you, back in 15, 16, started sounding the alarm bells, and things were playing out the way both you and I, as we first started talking to each other, you know, about this, as we expected it would, right? You know,
yeah.
PMIs were rolling over. They got down to sub 50. Growth was slowing globally. Profits were rolling over. Things were looking really bleak. And if you remember, your listeners remember, the first 6 weeks of 2016, you know, markets were down 12, 15%. People were panicking and hitting the sell button. And then magically, everything bounced on February 10th. And oil prices went from 26 bucks immediately right back to the low 30s. Stocks started to surge. And by the end of the quarter, by the end of the first quarter, it was back to flat. Now, what was really interesting about that is no one really understood what was happening at the time. But what had happened was China had taken a trillion. Now, a trillion, even though people throw that term around a lot, is a big big number. Remember, that's $1 every second for 31,710 years. So a trillion is a very large number. But they took $1 trillion and they started buying commodity futures. That's why oil prices turned around. They started buying iron ore futures and rebar futures. And they also started buying global stocks. And markets recovered. And suddenly there was this reflexive, and reflexivity is something George Soros talks about, that you don't actually have to have a fundamental improvement for things to fundamentally improve. Because what can happen is, as the price of assets started to rise again, people perceived that things were getting better, and therefore they were willing to take more risk, or, you know, banks were willing to extend more credit. And so central banks continued to pour credit into the markets, things turned around, and we had another kind of bounce off the bottom, a BF, you know, TD by the freaking dip, BTFD. And what happened is fundamentals did actually then start to get better. Animal spirits were triggered, and everybody got all excited. And so for the last couple of years, we've seen PMIs recover pretty dramatically. Now they've rolled over again. We saw unemployment continue to spike downward. We saw, you know, profits get this boost from, you know, what I think is one of the most horrible pieces of legislation I've ever seen in my lifetime, what I call tax deform. And that will be, it's funny that we opened talking about government-sponsored heroin. That's exactly what the tax reform bill is. It's government-sponsored heroin. And it'll make everybody feel good for a few minutes. And you know, earnings peaked in the first quarter. They're going to be lower this quarter in terms of growth rates. They'll be worse in third quarter, be worse in fourth quarter. When we lap it next year in first quarter, it'll be really tough comps. So I think we're going to have the letdown of a junkie. And that's a long-winded way, Zach, of saying that we're on that slow path back down. I think the market's peaked in January, January 26th, to be precise, on a Bradley turn date, no less, for those of you who follow me and my numerology stuff. I believe in cycles and all that good stuff. So I think we're finally at a point where gravity is important again, valuation is important again, and we're going to see things start to pay attention to fundamentals the way you and I, you know, were brought up to think about markets.
Yeah, and so is that line of thinking what's gotten you, or I found your quarterly, I think it was your quarterly letter where you talked about the year of the frog, right? Is that whole line of thinking? I wanted to get you, I haven't talked to you since that came out, and I wanted to get what it was that you saw that made you sit there and go, okay, people, this is the year of the frog. This is when the water starts to boil. And for those of you just joining us, we're with Mark Yusko, CEO, founder, chief investment officer of Morgan Creek Capital. But anyway, I just wanted to ask you, what was it that you saw changing the landscape? Was it the tax deal? Was it, you know, what was it that made you go, okay, this is it?
Yeah, it's fantastic point and fantastic question in the sense of, you know, by the Chinese New Year, we are, or by the Chinese Zodiac, we are the year of the dog. Maybe that's why all the dog mascot teams are doing so well this year. but really, I changed that around a little bit in my quarterly letter at the end of the year and talked about, no, it's really the year of the frog. And what that means is, you know, we've all heard the thing about, you know, how do you boil a frog? Well, you can't drop him in scalding hot water because it'll just jump right out. So you got to, you know, have the water be cool, and you put the frogs in, and then you turn it up a little bit by little bit. And by the time it's so hot that they want to jump out, their muscles are so relaxed that they can't jump out. And that's kind of what's been happening to investors since 2009. You know, the water was as cold as it could get, ice cold, March 9th, you know, very bottom. Everybody's panicking. The Dow hits 660, or the S&P hits 666. Everybody's freaking out. And the government says, oh, this has got to stop. And Bernanke, you know, actually I know somebody who was with him in the room. You know, he addressed the team and he said, look, I've looked into the abyss and we ain't going there. So we're going to do whatever it takes, long before Draghi uttered those famous words, and we're going to fix this. And so, you know, they took a playbook out of the 1930s. You know, people think QE was invented. Now, it wasn't. They used it in the 1930s to try to stop, you know, the Great Recession from becoming the Great Depression. And then the Fed screwed up in 1937, tried to raise interest rates from those zero levels too fast. And, you know, what was a pretty garden variety recession turned into, you know, the Depression. So the key is they pulled out this ancient playbook that, you know, Bernanke had written his thesis on. And it seemed to work, right? You give morphine, back to the drug thing, you give morphine to the patient who's on death's doorstep, and they start to get better. And then you give them more, and they start to get a little better, and you give them a little more. And so markets were recovering, and people were feeling giddy. And then this whole passive wave starts to take hold. And, you know, we've seen this movie before. You know, we saw it in the 70s, the late 60s, early 70s. We saw it again in the mid 80s. We saw it in the late 90s. When liquidity is abundant, people start to buy passive indices. And why do they do that? Well, it's because passive is no such thing. There's no such thing as passive investing. You know, it's just slow active. And what it is, it's momentum. It's capitalization weighted, so you buy more of things as they go up. Now, it's not as bad as the Dow. The Dow is the dumbest index ever created, right? It's created by a newspaper publisher. It's price-weighted. Think about that. The way you average the stocks in the index is by their price. Absolutely ridiculous and stupid. But, you know, the guy was not a mathematician or a financial guy. He was a newspaper publisher, Charles Dow. And so it's not quite that bad. But cap weighting is equally dumb in the sense that what you're doing is you're buying more of things as they become more expensive. That's the opposite of value investing. But momentum is the greatest strategy in the world when it's working. And then it goes off the cliff and you lose a lot of money. And so that's why the market tends to take the escalator up and the elevator down, is this capitalization weighting obsession that we've created. And why do we have an obsession with cap weighting? Well, it all goes back to the last Tax Reform Act, the Tax Act of 86, which actually had nothing to do with taxes and had everything to do with changing our retirement systems from defined benefit to defined contribution. Now, why did they do that? Oh, well, they'll tell you because we champion free markets and portability and the rights of the employee. BS. It had nothing to do with that. It had to do with channeling money from companies and individuals into the hands of mutual fund companies. The mutual fund companies bought the legislation. They lobbied for the legislation. They paid off the senators and congressmen to get the legislation passed. And all it does is it took money that was going into professional management and defined benefit plans. The companies were allowed to contribute one-third less because now they weren't on the hook for the full benefit. They were only on the hook for the contribution, and they let the market take care of the rest. And then they funnel all the money into mutual funds. Well, the mutual fund companies have gotten super, super rich, and the mutual fund, you know, executives have gotten super, super rich, and the average investor today has $44,000 to retire on. Ain't going to happen.
No.
Right?
No.
It's not going to happen. It's the biggest crime committed against humanity in the United States, I think, in my lifetime. And people who used to rely on a good pension and a good retirement plan are now stuck holding the bag. And, you know, look, I talk about this example all the time. You know, my daughter, when she got her first job, right, she called me and said, hey, Dad, will you help me with my 401k? Now, first of all, my daughter has no business being in charge of her retirement. Not because she's not a wonderful person. She's beautiful. She's brilliant. She's a nurse, actually a pediatric oncology nurse, so she's a saint. But she has no training or interest or time, because she works nights a lot of time, to manage her portfolio. And so what does she do? She defaults to 1 over N, which is what most people do. They put 1 over N, so you got 7 choices. You're 1/7 in each fund. And if there are 4 bond choices, you're 4/7 bonds. If there's 4 equity choices, you're 4/7 equity. That's a bad asset allocation model.
Yeah.
Okay? And I tried to help her a little bit, but I'm not going to pay attention to it day by day. So what she should really have is a professional managing her money in a hybrid structure where it could still be portable, but outsource it to, you know, a professional manager. So we did the best we could. We gave a little bit of it to a tactical allocation fund where we hope they will manage it better for her. And she'll be fine because, you know, she has a great job and her husband has a great job, and they'll be fine. But it's just wrong to put her in that position, or anybody at 26, 28, 35, 45. It's just not your primary job to manage your assets, and people spend no time on it. Hopefully they're listening to you and getting help from a good advisor like you and your team, but they shouldn't do it themselves.
No,
anyway, I don't even think I answered your question, but no, I got to rant on one of my favorite topics.
No, and I that's the goal. I try to get to the rants, and I want to continue on, but we got to take a quick break. And if you're listening, stick with us. We got Mark Yusko with us, the CEO and founder of Morgan Creek Capital, and he's been kind enough to spend some time with us. And stick with us. We'll be right back. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Do better in bull markets. Do better in bear markets. Pay less fees in all markets. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management. You can subscribe to Zach's free newsletter, The Bulwark Insider Report, at knowyourriskradio.com.
Stocks, bonds, and real estate are all at record highs. So why risk it? Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer of Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Call now and get our brand new version of Common Sense Investing. It's our complimentary booklet that shows you how you can protect your retirement portfolio against loss, but still participate in market gains. Safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. Our clients have increased their returns while being insured against loss. And like our client Dory Monson says, go from retirement hoping to retirement planning.
I am indeed a client, Zach, and I got to tell you, you have to read Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back. And we're not going to do a long, drawn-out introduction. We're going to get right back into it. We've got Mark Yusko with us, founder and CIO, CEO, the guy in charge at Morgan Creek Capital. And Mark, want to jump right back into our conversation. And something I was thinking about when you were talking, and I have these conversations a lot with our clients and prospective clients. When we start talking about valuations, they go, well, we don't do market timing. I don't do market timing. And one of the things I wanted to hear you talk a little bit about that, because there's this misconception if we're more exposed to risk or less exposed to risk at times that we're market timing. And what I tried to explain to them is, no, it's not market timing. What it is it's looking at assets that on a traditional basis, right? Everybody goes, well, that's not how something's valued. I always kind of laugh when they start bringing up other ways to value it, because investing in its very nature is buying future cash flows, hopefully at a discounted price today. And if that's not how we're looking at it, then maybe we won't be wrong tomorrow, but we will be wrong eventually. And trying to differentiate between market timing and managing risk exposure. Can you speak to that a little bit? Because when we talk about market timing or year of the frog, I think people get misconceptions that we're timing markets where we're not really, right? We're looking at them and saying, people, look, this doesn't make any sense.
No, look, the biggest fallacy in investing is that we're not market timing. Every single person who says they're not market timing is guilty of market timing, and in the worst possible way, and here's why. They think they're not market timing because they want to let everything run. Mm. Well, think about that. Every one of us should have a strategic policy. We should have a strategic asset allocation policy from which we derive a great long-term return. And the way to think about that is we know that each asset class has a certain return. And we know that the combination of asset class is going to have a return. But the only way you achieve that return is to constantly rebalance your portfolio back toward those targets. But what everybody does is they let things run. So when stocks are rising and they're going up, and you say, let's rebalance back to our target. They say, no, we don't time the market. Well, you are timing the market. You're timing the market, again, in the worst possible way. You're moving away from your target, which by definition is market timing. If you rebalance back to your target, that is the antithesis of market timing. That is prudent fiduciary management. So to let your assets run away from your target and to say, I need to get every last nickel out of every rise in the market, what happens, and it happens every single time, is you go over the falls, and then you don't get out because you're not paying attention. And then when it starts to go, I say, no, I just got to get back to where I was, then I'll get out. And then it goes down more. And they say, no, now I have to get back a little more before I get out. And then it gets to the bottom, and people despair, and they sell. And so if you think about it, over the last 20 years, the average stock fund, if you just bought and held the average stock fund, you made 7.5%. If you bought and held the average bond fund, you made 6.5%. You know what the average individual investor made? 3.5%.
Wow.
How can that be? All they had to do is buy stocks and they made 7.5. All they had to do is buy bonds and make 6.5. Buy 50-50 and make 7. Okay? That's not what they do. They always market time by trying to chase what's hot, and then they sell when it becomes not, and they chase what has previously been hot. So they are market timing, but again, they're doing the antithesis of what you should do, which is rebalance on a periodic basis, quarterly or annually, back to a strategic target, whether that be 60-40, 70-30, 80-20, 67-33, it doesn't matter. Okay, what matters is that you have a disciplined process. And most importantly, what the average person should do is they should find a great advisor like you and your team, and they should not be involved in managing their capital. They should be involved in earning their capital, spending their capital, building their capital, investing in themselves, which is the highest return investment any of us can make, and spending no time thinking about their capital, their money. That's why you have advisors. And there's this myth that doing it yourself is better. Well, do you give yourself a haircut? No. I could give myself a haircut. I shouldn't ever give myself a haircut, but I certainly could do it. You know, my dad just had open heart surgery. Should he have done surgery on himself? No. And then I take this analogy a little further. When he walked in the hospital, did he demand the cheapest surgeon? Mm-mm. He wants the best surgeon. And yeah. In what business do we know does the best person not charge the most money? So there's this obsession with low fees. Well, that's not what we want to do in investing. We don't want to minimize fees. We want to maximize returns.
Right.
We want to maximize net returns. And so I would gladly pay someone a high fee if they were more talented and could produce better results. And think about every business, you know, doctor, lawyer, football coach, basketball player. Okay. A winning coach doesn't get a fee reduction. He gets a salary increase. The best basketball players don't go down in value when they have a great series like the Golden State Warriors, right? Their contracts go up. And yet in investing, we all obsess about trying to be invested in the lowest fee product. Well, that doesn't make any sense. And that's why, again, the average investor underperforms, not outperforms, because they've been sold a bill of goods. I say they've been Bogleized. And I have nothing against John Bogle. He's a brilliant man. He's built an incredible business, and he's a billionaire, and I'm not. So I have nothing but admiration for him. But I think his message of fees first is just wrong. That's good for him. That's why he's a billionaire and all of his users are not. Think about that for a second.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah.
Another rant. Sorry.
No. I'm trying. I'm a rant enabler. That's the job here.
I love it.
I was laughing about your haircut analogy because I absolutely stole that from you. And I was telling. But it reminded me of a meeting that I had with a prospective client recently, and we looked at his returns over the last 10 years, and then we looked at the returns of our portfolio over the last 10 years, you know, using real returns net of fees, and then, you know, using projections. And not only did we outperform the portfolio, but we did it with about probably half the volatility. And the end result was pretty close. I mean, we had better returns, but I mean, the volatility was ridiculously lower in what we were doing. And he's just a standard ETF guy. And he kind of looked at me and he goes, well, yeah, but the volatility might have been lower, but we ended up at the exact same place and I'm not paying you a fee. And I just kind of shook my head and walked away and just went, if you don't understand the value of a lower volatility and still winning in the return game in the end,
I'm laughing because if I don't laugh, I'll cry.
Right.
The thing is, volatility is all that matters, right? Investing is a game of minimizing losses, right? There are three rules to managing money. Rule number one, don't lose money. Rule number two, don't lose money. Rule number three, don't forget the first two rules. It's about mitigating volatility. You know, Charlie Ellis wrote about it, you know, winning the loser's game. In tennis, the winner doesn't have more winners. They have fewer unforced errors, right? Just get the ball back to the other side of the net and let your opponent hit it into the net, particularly when you're playing against amateurs, right?
Because
they think they can hit winners and they're writing checks their body can't cash and, you know, they miss. So same thing as investing. Investing is not about the winning stroke. It's not about the master investment. It's about minimizing losses. It's about being diversified. Because here's what low volatility does for you. So I showed this chart yesterday in my presentation. So over the last 30 years, okay, 30 years, now we're talking a long time, right? Over the last 30 years, hedge funds have delivered the same return as long-only equities. And people say, oh, well, see, that proves hedge funds are a bad deal. I'm like, whoa, no. You've gotten the same return. Okay, but you've done it with half the volatility. Now, what that means is that the bulk of investors, had they just held a pure hedge fund portfolio over that whole period, would have realized most of those returns because they wouldn't have been shaken out in all of the nasty drops. So when the market dropped 50% in 2008-9, okay, hedge funds were down 20. So instead of selling everything at the bottom, which what most stock investors did, they wouldn't have done that. So what low volatility does, it gives you peace of mind to stay committed to your strategy. And commitment to your strategy is the only way you win over the long term. So this guy saying that I'm not paying you a fee for lower volatility is missing the entire point of investing. That's exactly what you're paying for. You're paying for risk mitigation, risk management, and keeping you on track so that you don't try to play the winners or try to play the loser's game and try to hit that cross-court winner with topspin against the wind and hit the net and lose the match.
I'm gonna steal that one from you as well. What I need to do is set up conference calls in these client meetings where we dial you in.
Oh, I'd love to do it. There's nothing I like better than being that guy from 50 miles away. Because when you tell, when any of us tell somebody we love something, they don't hear it, they don't listen. And when you take someone from 50 miles away, oh, they're an expert. Oh, they must know what they're talking about. Oh, I'll listen to them. And they can say the exact same thing. In fact, most times they're fed the exact lines from the person who invited them. But the key is I love doing it. And I love talking to clients because, again, I'm not there to pitch a product. I'm not there to pitch you or me or anybody else. I'm there to educate.
Right.
And I have two talks I give. One is called Alternative Thinking About Investing, and the other is, Welcome to the Digital Age and the Crypto Economy, which is, where I think the world is headed. And the Alternative Thinking About Investing, all I talk about is this idea of risk mitigation first, okay? Wealth creation comes from risk mitigation. Every client that you or I or anybody else has, they're already rich. That's the whole point. That's why they're the clients.
Right.
So how did they get rich? Getting rich comes from concentration. Every, wealth created around the world comes from concentration. Concentrated stock position, concentrated real estate position, concentrated business ownership. That's how you get rich. Now, they say, what's the secret to creating a small fortune? Start with a large fortune and stay concentrated. Because at some point, you get competed away. The people who owned Cisco in 2000 and watched it go up, or Microsoft in 2000 and watched it go up, said, I'll never sell. Well, now here 18 years later, you probably should have sold. So the key is that diversification keeps you rich. Concentration gets you rich. Diversification keeps you rich. So what I love to do is talk to clients and say, look, your job is to make the money. And then you need to have three buckets. A liquidity bucket to fund your lifestyle, 10 to 15% in very liquid assets that you can spend. Then you're going to have your get-rich bucket. That's 10 to 15%, and that's for the friend's condo deal, the brother-in-law's venture deal. You're going to lose all of that, so keep it small. And then 70 to 80% in the stay-rich bucket. And that's what you give to people like you, the advisor, to take care of. And that needs to have a diversified portfolio that rebalances quarterly or annually, that isn't trying to hit long balls, that plays Ichiro baseball. Hit singles, an occasional double, steal a base, maybe make a mistake once or twice a year and hit a home run. And everybody says, how did he do that? He's so small. Well, because he made a mistake, right? When Ichiro's on, he slaps singles all around everywhere. He outruns ground balls, and he gets on base and scores more runs than anybody else. And the Mariners were great when they had him.
Yep.
So the key is that's the way to win in investing, too. It's not about hitting home runs, because if you try to hit home runs, what happens? You lead the league in strikeouts, too. And that's not a good way to invest.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Another ramble, but I really do love having that communication with clients to say, you focus on making the money and spending the money, and we collectively will focus on diversifying the capital and growing it slowly, because that's how you create large fortunes.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got to take a quick break. And Mark, we'd sit here and talk to you all day. So you feel free to cut us off whenever you got to run. I'd be remiss if we didn't have a quick conversation about China and Bitcoin. Do you have some time? Can we do that?
Yep, absolutely. Be right back.
All right, so stick with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach discuss key investment strategies across several asset classes, not just stocks and bonds. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Stocks, bonds, and real estate are all at record highs. So why risk it? Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer of Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Call now and get our brand new version of Common Sense Investing. It's our complimentary booklet that shows you how you can protect your retirement portfolio against loss, but still participate in market gains. Safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. Our clients have increased their returns while being insured against loss. And like our client Dory Monson says, go from retirement hoping to retirement planning.
I am indeed a client, Zach, and I gotta tell you, you have to read Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management's a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, we are back. Thank you for sticking with us. And we are joined by our special guest, Mark Yusko, CEO, CIO, and founder of Morgan Creek Capital, which is a hedge fund. Mark, you guys, speaking of which, you guys are managing, what, between $3 and $4 billion now?
Not quite that big. We're okay. About $1.5 billion, and it's a good business to be in. We do a little bit in hedge funds. We do a little bit in private investing. And literally today, we are closing our first fund focused on blockchain technology. So that's pretty exciting.
You see, man, you're good. So the next thing we wanted to talk to you about was Bitcoin. And I want to start kind of from, well, and not just Bitcoin, but blockchain.
Yep.
And want to start from kind of the 40,000-foot view here. I remember when Bitcoin was first launched, and it was really intriguing to me because it came online right in the middle of the financial crisis when, you know, the Fed was going ballistic and I was still trying to figure out what in the world QE was. And I remember sitting there chuckling to myself thinking, you know, this is really a shot across the bow of central banks and fiat currency. And I didn't understand it nearly as well as I do now, and I still don't understand it as well as I should. And one of the things that's intrigued me about your approach on this is, you know, you are managing, you know, $1.5 billion. You've worked with some of the most, you know, famous and renowned investors in the game. You've swam, and I'm not trying to pump sunshine here, but you've swam and you still do, obviously, in the highest circles in terms of investing. And you're one of the only guys I've heard that is repeatedly, you know, pitched the virtue and the potential of blockchain and Bitcoin specifically. And you've taken a lot of flack for it.
Yep.
and I don't want to name any names here, but some shockingly rude, pointed statements from people that I wouldn't have expected it from. And to your credit, you've remained calm. And it reminds me of something that you talk about a lot, which is a variant perception. What is it? Because I got to tell you, it makes me nervous. I see the potential. I really respect your analysis of it. What is it that they're missing? And I know you're not going to go on a rant about, you know, I'm not trying to goad you into a personal attack. So I know you won't take the bait. But what is it that they're missing? And what's, you know, I can't imagine that this has made you popular in some of those circles. You've probably gotten a lot of...
No, look, you're exactly right, Zach. I mean, a couple things. One, I had the greatest job in the world, right? I get paid to talk to the smartest people on the planet about investing. I mean, I've been doing this now, coming up on 30-some-odd years, and it's amazing. I've talked to, you know, literally the smartest people on the planet, from Cliff Asness at AQR to, names that go on and on and on, from, you know, Julian Robertson to George Soros to Michael Steinhardt to lots of really exciting and fun people. The original guys at Sequoia Capital, Don Valentine and Michael Moritz, you know, founder of, or the first investor in Google. So, just been very lucky in my life to run around with some of the most amazing investors on the planet. And what's really interesting is technological innovation engenders these incredible rifts. And so this is not my first rodeo. I remember when I first got into the business, first coming out of school in the 80s, and there was this thing called the personal computer, right? And remember people saying, who would ever put a computer in their home? No one would ever want their own computer. We have these mainframe computers that sit on university campuses and big corporations, and no one could ever displace IBM. And needless to say, you should have went short IBM and long Microsoft and Intel and Cisco and a bunch of other companies. Dell, I literally bought my first computer from Michael Dell from his dorm room when he was selling them at University of Texas, a little company that he formed called PCs Limited.
You should have taken him public.
Well, I should have taken him public. What I should have done is I should have kept the computer as a keepsake.
Yeah.
But the other funny thing is I learned years later, the only reason I bought it is because he had earned in PC Magazine an Editor's Choice Award. And I didn't learn until years later that the way you got an Editor's Choice Award is you paid the magazine extra advertising dollars.
Oh, that's good.
Like, what a scam that was. I believed it because it was a legitimate ranking, right? Well, it wasn't legitimate, but I thought it was. But Michael was a genius, and Michael built a great company and is a great investor, and now has a great family office that does great investments, and I know those guys. But my story is that when we started investing in things at the first equity shop that I worked for around personal computing, clients were like ready to fire us. They're like, you need to own IBM, and I don't want to own this Microsoft thing. And I remember the first Microsoft office building across from Burgermaster, right on right before you get on the bridge.
Oh yeah,
I mean long before the complex in Redmond and Kirkland and all that stuff. I used to look at that. And I'm like, what is that Microsoft thing? I wonder what that's going to be. I don't know if anyone's seen the picture of the original 10 Microsofties. Would you have given those guys money? Whew, that's a scary picture. I can't believe we all dress like that. But bottom line is, it's not this happening again. 1996, right? Yep. Don Valentine at Sequoia hires this guy, Michael Moritz. He's a cub reporter for the Wall Street Journal. And everyone's like, what does this guy know about investing? Well, he invested in a thing called Yahoo, and then he invested in this thing called Google. And remember, when Google was started, it was not the number one search engine. It was like number 33 or something. And eventually it became ubiquitous, and we actually use it as a verb. So if you invest in these early technological waves, people think you're an idiot. They think you're stupid. And one thing I love about Twitter is it formalizes the labeling. And so when I put something out on Twitter and people personally attack me or say I'm an idiot, then I know I'm onto something. And when everyone agrees with it, I'm like, oh, geez, that's already in the price, so let's move on to the next idea. And so I started writing about and tweeting about blockchain technology and Bitcoin back in 2014. And, Bitcoin prices had fallen from $1,000 to $400. And I write these very long letters. You talked about the year of the frog, and then I wrote one called The Virus is Spreading that's all about blockchain technology. And, back in 14, I wrote this 77-page letter, which people think are too long, but I do it because it's how I think. And I would say, if I can't read what I wrote, how do I know what I think?
And they're good reads. I really enjoy them.
Well, I appreciate that. But I wrote one paragraph out of 77 pages in first quarter 2014, and I had clients call me up and say they were going to fire me because why are you talking about this crazy stuff? This is not going to be worth anything. Well, that was when it was $400. Today we're almost $6,000, and people are angry. I'm like, why are you angry? Well, it's down from 20,000. Right, but I wrote in December that at 20,000, that was a stupid price because people are conflating value and price, right? The value of a network, right? How much is one cell phone worth? Nothing.
Yeah.
How about two cell phones? Still nothing. How about 10,000 cell phones? Maybe a little bit. How about 1 million cell phones? Now you're talking.
Yeah.
1 billion cell phones? 10 billion cell phones? That's why Apple's the most, important company in the world right now. Alibaba, right on their heels. But networks matter. And the bigger the network, the more valuable it is. And so when Bitcoin had, 50,000 users, right? It wasn't very valuable, right? It traded single-digit dollars. Today, with 50 million plus users, it's significantly more valuable. And when there's, you know, 5 billion users, which I think there will be someday, as cryptocurrency replaces fiat currency over the long term. Why? Because we're going from the analog age to the digital age. Everything that's going on now is just about technology. Technology follows a 14-year cycle. 1954 was the mainframe. 1968 was the microchip. 1982 was the personal computer. 1996 was the internet. 2010 was the mobile net. And 2024, which is still 6 years from now, is the internet of value. And what the internet did for information and commerce. Remember, Paul Krugman said that the internet would never be more valuable than a fax machine.
I was going to bring that up.
Why would anybody need anything other than the Encyclopedia Britannica, which, you know, I used to read the Encyclopedia Britannica for fun back when that's all there was. There was no internet. So
I remember those days.
All the world's. Pardon?
I said I remember those days. Yeah,
the good old days.
Yeah,
right? I mean, I was on Capitol Hill watching the moon landing from my apartment when I was a little boy. So the key is that what people don't realize is this technological wave that's coming is going to take us from the analog age. So for 400 years, we've been trading pieces of paper. Right, stock certificates, bearer bonds, certificates of title for cars and houses. It's paper. There's no reason it should be paper. We're going to move to a fully digital age, and the only way to do that is through the adoption of blockchain technology, which is just distributed ledger technology in an immutable and decentralized application. And why is decentralized so important? Well, a centralized system goes down all the time. How many times have you tried to log onto something or go to a website and they say, oh, we're having technical difficulties because they're a centralized system. How do you kill a centralized system? All you can do is kill one hub. A decentralized system, it's like a hydra. You chop off one head and you got six others to deal with. So decentralization is better. It's been coming since 1988, right? This is not a new technology. Tim May wrote the Crypto Anarchist Manifesto in 1988. The Economist magazine had on the cover that we'd have a global currency by 2018. It's happened to be 2018 right now. And they called it the Phoenix. Instead, it's going to be Bitcoin. Now, Bitcoin is just one important thing. And the price, the current price of Bitcoin is insignificant. Just doesn't matter. What matters is that Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, and there's only like a dozen cryptocurrencies. There's a whole bunch of utility tokens that people think are cryptocurrencies. Those are not. Those are utility tokens, and most of them are like Chuck E. Cheese tokens. They really are worthless. But people, it's like early stage venture capital. 90% of the deals go to zero, but the 10% that go up a lot, we remember. Right? We all talk about Apple, but we forget about the 9 other companies that started in a garage and didn't work. Or we talk about Microsoft as a success. Well, you know, Microsoft almost didn't exist because the IBM guys really wanted to buy CPM technology, which is way better than DOS at the time. But the guys from CPM had put the date of the meeting wrong in their book. And when the guys flew from Seattle, they met with Bill, thought he was the coffee boy. They went down, said, we're not doing it with Microsoft. They went down to California. The couple that invented CPM didn't show up. They said, well, we can't do nothing. So they went back to Seattle and signed the DOS agreement. True story.
Wow, I didn't know that.
So, oh, it's a crazy story. So the key is, I probably have some of my factoids a little bit wrong, but that's exactly what happened is the CPM guys made a mistake. My first box in college was a CPM box, and it didn't crash every couple days. I'd have to turn it off and restart it. But the key is, it's a long ramble to say, this is about technology. It's about ownership of the network. And you want to own networks early, and you don't want to look at the price. Think about this. How many people do you know, and you should know at least some, who bought Amazon in 1998 on the IPO and have never sold it?
Yeah, I believe
it's almost zero. There's almost zero, right? There's a couple, but almost zero. Now, why didn't they do that? That's because every year since Amazon's been public, it's had a double-digit drawdown. The average peak-to-trough drawdown has been 31%, and three times it's fallen more than 90%.
Wow, three times.
Three times. So people never stick with it because when it's down 90%, what do? You sell, and you don't buy it back because you're ruined. And that's what's happening with Bitcoin right now. People who bought at 20,000 are selling now at 6,000, and they're not going to buy back. And that would be foolish. But let's not talk about crypto. Let's talk about blockchain. Let's talk about the innovation wave that's going to happen. every asset of value in the world is going to be tokenized. Every stock, every bond, every piece of real estate, every car title, every property title, it's all going to be digital tokens. We're going to get rid of paper shares. We're going to go to a fully digital world, and we're going to have fractional ownership potential of every asset in the world. Let's take the Plaza Hotel in New York, iconic piece of real estate. How many buyers are there in the world for the Plaza Hotel? 500? 600?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Pick a number. You got to have $600 million handy to buy it. But how many people are there around the world who would like to own a fractional piece of the iconic Plaza Hotel?
Oh, man. But
a million?
Yeah.
10 million? 100 million? A billion? It's a big number. So what's going to happen is the value of that asset goes up. We've been contacted by a professional sports team to help them tokenize their team. How much would your listeners pay to own a fractional share of the Seahawks?
Oh.
I bet it's more than the current value.
Yeah, right? And the value would
Everybody
go through the
would
roof.
Love to say, I own a piece of the team. How yep. awesome. And so they could buy a Hawk token, and then they could use those Hawk tokens not only as an ownership value of the team, but they could use Hawk tokens as a utility to pay for tickets, to buy stuff in the stadium, to buy merchandise, to trade with their friends, like trading cards. The utility of tokenizing real life assets is the biggest technical revolution I've seen in my lifetime, and it's just getting started. And so all this talk about Bitcoin this and Bitcoin that misses the whole point. Cryptocurrencies are store of value, medium exchange. Utility tokens are just early stage venture capital. Don't do one, do a whole bunch, maybe one or two win, but a whole bunch of them are going to zero, and that's okay. But what you really want to focus your time is on security tokens, and that's still yet to come. But think about it. None of your listeners would ever say, I bought Apple paper shares represented by a digital QSIP, electronic QSIP, settled on DTCC, right? They say, I bought Apple.
Right.
In the future, when they say, I bought Apple, it will be a digital token that trades on an exchange rather than a paper security held in DTC trading on NYSE. So anyway, I will leave you with that. It's been fun hanging out and talking about everything under the sun and actually weaving in a little Seattle history as well. The only thing we didn't talk about was Jimi Hendrix, but
yeah,
we'll do that next time.
And no, and I appreciate the time, Mark. And as always, it's enlightening and insightful. And I hope that all the listeners enjoyed it as much as I did. And can't thank you enough for being with us. And we're going to keep an eye on this stuff and try to bug you and get you on again here in the future for updates. So thanks again for joining us.
You know, I'm around. You know where to find me. And if people are looking for me on Twitter, it's at Mark Yusko.
Yes.
And otherwise, you can find me on this channel with Zach and his crew. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Can't say thank you enough to Mark for joining us, and we've got to end this a little more abruptly than we wanted to. This conversation goes on, but we've only got so much time on the air. And if you want to hear the rest of this segment, I would strongly suggest that you do. If you don't know Mark, we said on the show that he runs $1.5 billion hedge fund called Morgan Creek Capital, but Mark is, you know, I'd put him up there in, you know, the top 100 investment minds in the country, and that's over a very long term career. He's seen the good, the bad. His fund fared phenomenally well during 2008-09 and the tech bubble. Really knows what he's talking about, and this whole digital currency thing is a very hot topic. So anyway, you can go to knowyourriskradio.com, go to our podcast page on iTunes. We're also on Google Play, so you can get us on there and listen to the rest of the interview. We will post the show as normal, but we will also be posting the interview in and of itself. So you can just listen to the interview. You can also get at me on Twitter, which is at KYR Radio. And I will be posting just the interview on our Twitter page as well. So anyway, I'd encourage you to listen to it. He's a great thinker, and he's kind enough to spend time with us for whatever reason. I always enjoy it because you get to bounce stuff off, you know, one of the best investing minds in the world. So anyway, thank you for listening. Great show. Have a wonderful week. Have a wonderful 4th of July as well. Thanks, and enjoy the weekend, folks. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com. Tune in next week to Know Your Risk Radio with your host, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.